The next part of this upreading from the book of Arthur Burlett's Trip to Akkart is 21 and headline A Very Serious Conversation. We remind all the rest of that day speaking about these things and others as well, only being interrupted to eat the meals and for 1 hour that Akkart went swimming in the sea. I shall not narrate all that we talked about, because it would need a whole book to relate what Akkart explained to me in that one day. He briefed me on many things, such as the obligations of individuals, justice, the manner in which they select their counselors and their governor, etc. At a certain level, I could grasp the regime and the manner in which they lived, and he sighed deeply and said, "And moreover, we have a very grave problem which grows worse with each day that passes. What is that? It is the problem of overpopulation, which, if not resolved soon, perhaps will have to take drastic measures of some order that our high religious sense does not allow. You don't have any solution in sight for this problem, then?" "Remotely, we have. What is the solution?" "To transport part of our people to another planet less populous, with an intuition to safeguard our planet, I propose the following." "What was that you told me about the moon? The scientists of Earth have almost affirmed it as uninhabited." That is uninhabited, we know perfectly well, but I can tell you that the satellite of Earth, which possesses no life of its own, furthermore changes temperature every 14 days, Earth days, from very hot to very cold. "Then which is the planet that you gentlemen have in mind?" He made a sore face and pursed his lips and finally said, "I dislike being the one to tell you, but as the son of the sun asked me to do this, I have to do it." Before he continued, I was seized with fear that he would say yes, as he asked, "Perhaps the Akkartians are planning to invade Earth?" "No, that is not the exact term, but it is really Earth which we hope can resolve our problem here." A cold chill ran over my body and I felt momentarily mute. I thought, if these people want to do that, with the weapons and the means of locomotion at their disposal, they could reduce us to nothing in a few hours. But what would you really intend to do with the terrestrials and the Earth then? I asked, swallowing. "In the first place, I can tell you that we are not going to do anything bad to anybody. All of the misfortune that happens to you will be accomplished by your own hands." "In what way?" "Here is the most crucial part of the problem. I must tell you," he responded, demonstrating a certain sadness. After that he gave me the following narrative with small interruptions. "As I have already told you, for a number of years we have been able to get to Earth. Since then we have been exploring all you have there, cities, deserts, forests, seas, rural zones, etc. We know that there still exists very much empty space, such as we had already prepared to plan to invade the Earth by force. However, We understood that this could provoke an enormous killing, which would be useless, and thus our religious, ethic, and our elevated human spirit would not allow us to do such a thing. But I can tell you that during our investigations on Earth, we discovered a condition that is going to benefit us much in the future. What is that? We are aware of all that happens on Earth. You can confirm all that I'm telling you. We know which of the countries are friends among themselves. We discovered at this time that the terrestrials are perfecting a weapon that we had one time here in our cart, almost mutually destroying ourselves. Luckily, we comprehended in time and know what yesterday represented a danger. Today serves us in agriculture and many other things. Are you referring to nuclear energy and the atomic bomb? But in what sense are the bombs which the terrestrials possess and are fabricating going to benefit you, otherwise than explode? We are not exactly unaware that there on your Earth there exists two or more factions which are in conflict and all possess atomic bombs with high destructive power, and they continue to make more all the time and of greater scale. If instead of using the nuclear energy for destructive ends and they used it constructively, our hopes would be nullified. What hopes? To inhabit the Earth. Are you saying that you intend to invade the Earth? Yes, but as I've already said, not on those terms. Let me explain in what manner. You must be aware that an atomic war on Earth is inevitable. And if we wanted to instigate it, we could, since it would only be necessary to interrupt an airplane or ship of either faction, that the one would judge that it was the other. But we are not going to intervene in any such manner, because we have come to the conclusion that they would not resist for much time the curiosity to see the fold-up that caused the situation. And when this happens, none of them will escape the devastation, because with only a few of those bombs, the whole terrestrial globe will be contaminated. Once this happens, we can peacefully take over the whole planet, because those few who remain will be in no position to offer resistance. On the contrary, they will welcome us. But what future is there for the terrestrial globe contaminated by destruction and radioactive poison? Whether it is contaminated constitutes no problem for us. Why not? Because here we have an apparatus which neutralizes the malefic effects of radioactive poison, transforming it into fertilizer for the soil and those beings. If such a war happened, how much time would you wait before going into action? We would go into action as soon as the war ended, because it would cost us to wait, as the vegetation would all die in the zones of conflagration. And if there was a victor who had not suffered either human or material destruction, well, there is no victor in such a war. They would attack each other mutually. We are certain of this because we know all the secrets of the terrestrials, against which they know practically nothing concerning us. But if I tell them what is here and what they have seen and heard on a cart, not tomorrow, I will give you all the reason when I say that nobody is going to want to believe you. What suddenly interests me is that which awakened the Son of the Sun and the Council, when from the one moment to the next, after finding danger in my return to earth, he asked me to make a written account of all that I saw, heard and felt here, and try to divulge it. Perhaps it was a test to my loyalty. I can tell you that it was not for that. We are interested in a large part of the terrestrials having knowledge of some possible narrative of yours in this respect. And as it is to be hoped, nobody is going to believe it at this time. Why not at this time? Because they are only going to believe when some of these facts have been confirmed. How will this benefit them and when? When they come out of the war and we appear there, the few who survived their intermediate condition will know something of our system of government, our manner of life and being, and thus will not offer us resistance, which would be useless to try. I would like to broaden the question on one point. Are you saying that you are going to come as owners of the house and not as rangers? Is that it? Well, I have already said that we are not going to do anything bad to anybody. Now, once you have done the mischief by your hands, nothing is more logical than that we benefit you. We Akkartians, by force of circumstances, have learned to be realists. This question is compatible with a fable that my father always told when I was a boy, which is as follows. A man who has innumerable cages thought it well to place birds in almost all of them. He had two hanging one beside the other. If the two cages, the birds were multiplying, one came to the point where there was no more room for more, but they lived well adjusted and were each other contented with a place to sit. Thus all those that the man allowed to hatch also were given the means to live. Contrary to the first, the second had plenty of space. However, they commenced to quarrel. Each one wanted the better place. The stronger lived comfortably, and the weak had to get used to the owners to be satisfied with the cramps. The roost there was left to the strong. Each one wanted to be better and to control. Finally, a struggle broke out, so fiercely that they mutually destroyed each other, and with them also most of the weak ones, who had nothing to do with this. The man, on seeing this, gave access to those of the other keg, of which he moved half to the first. These went there and reconstructed the broken nests, resuscitating some of those who had escaped with their lives, and thus they were able to live in peace for many years, without worrying about the problem of space, as much in one keg as the other. I understand the moral, unhappily for us terrestrials, perhaps this same is going to come to pass. It is somewhat similar to Earth and Akkart, I said with head down. After some minutes of silence between us, I asked, do you, sir, not feel that you have erred in showing and explaining to me all this with respect to your arms and means of locomotion. Since once I return to Earth, if I am given the time to this in manner in which you have explained all, I think the government would give me the necessary means, and I have the impression that I would come to a conclusion. He swallowed dryly and leaned back to respond, and then between reprimanding and fear he said, "Well, in the first place, I believe you are not even thinking to do this, and the second is that the terrestrials at the moment do not have materials to this end at their disposal. But please do not speak to me of similar things more, because if anyone here suspected what we are doing, perhaps you would have to live here on a cart the rest of your days of life. I say anyone here, because I cannot judge their capabilities, neither is one thing in one thing or another. Only then was it that I saw where I had put myself with my foolish supposions, and I responded. But it is not that I judge myself capable of this. It is scarcely a supposition. This I know, but you are not going to want to make these supposions known to the Son of the Sun and the Council." Saying this, he stopped talking, and remained with the fingers of his hands interlaced pensive. I wanted to ask him more questions, but before I came from my lips, I withheld it and then did the same with my fingers, almost unknowingly. How bad would it be if the terrestrials came to possess disintegrators, neutralizers, the solar ships, in short, all that they possessed? The answer is logical. With the terrestrials as bellicose as they are, if they came to have this power, would not wait for a possible catastrophe to happen to the Akkadian to overpower their planet? Yes, they would do this without losing any time to attack, and then the problem of overpopulation would be solved with those same Akkadian and not with the terrestrials. The sun was now getting well down, as if it were 5 o'clock on Earth in the month of May. I was beginning to feel the cold ever more. Then a cork broke the barrier of silence which had endured for several minutes between us, saying, "Let us collect this up. While we are waiting for the fifth meal, we can drink something." "Yes, sir." We left there and went to one of the dining rooms that 20 kilometers hotel had. 20 kilometers long hotel. But first we went to the place where we had left all things. Arriving there, we picked up our articles and went to sit at one of the hundreds of tables that had a food bar. A cork made a sign to one of the youths, who nodded assent with his head, and there in moments I saw him coming toward our table, bringing 2 cups, half served. While we were drinking it, I asked, "Will we spend the night here?" "No, we will go back to Turnuk after the meal." I still felt a little offended by the last conversation and commenced to think of the hours that still lacked for me to be returned to Earth, since for anything else that I causally might say could be of retaining me there the rest of my life. Then I resolved to sound out a cork to see the possibilities of shortening my return back to Earth. What time will we leave tomorrow? In the evening, according to arrangements. It is that son of the sun will not concur if you, sir, ask in my name to leave earlier. It is well possible, he responded, sighing. It is not easy to speak with him still today. Is it not easy to speak? Yes, it is possible to transmit your request if you wish. Yes, I would like to. It seemed to me that he was pleased with my idea. I don't know if it was for being tired of my company or for fear that I would say something more compromising, which he, in duty of conscience, would have to denounce me for. That was down of this part or chapter. The next is chapter 22, and I think we continue here directly. A Different Justice 22. We had already taken the drink and were waiting for the meal, when my attention was called to the aspect of a man who was seated in front of me to my right. It was mainly his dress, since in all the parts I had not seen a man so poorly dressed. He, besides being badly dressed, showed a face of suffering. His dress consisted of a kind of jumpsuit overall, half dirty and faded, without covering on his head, and with one old sandal on his foot. When he saw that I was staring, he spoke something to me which I did not understand, but by his gestures I understood that he was asking if he could eat. I turned to a cork and said, I thought you told me, sir, that here there are no rich and no poor, that all are equal. Yes, that is it. Then what about one there? The one is like this. See what he has there on his neck. That medallion on a chain. Yes, what does it signify? Is it something religious? No, on the contrary. He is a criminal. A criminal? Exactly. But what was the crime that he committed? I don't know. It is not indicated. Then how can you, sir, say that he is a criminal? Well, I will explain. Here in Ockhart we have no prisons. I continued to look at him half confused. A person who commits a crime is judged according to his guilt and receives the castigation due, from a transfer of jobs even to the heaviest, which is the pain of death. The crime of this one must have been of medium to great degree, but not so great as to merit the maximum penalty. For this they have condemned him to I don't know how much time to a penalty of exclusion from society. What penalty does that come to be? He is obliged to work without having the rights of a citizen of a court. He cannot enter any public establishment to obtain that which he needs. But how are they going to know in all the places that he is condemned? Very simple. When he is condemned, they put a chain and medallion like that on his neck, which he can only take off when he has completed the sentence, and thus this one has to always walk with that dress and symbol which identifies him. And if he went to another place outside the city, He cannot go because he is forbidden from entering any vehicle, and to go afoot is also not admitted, because the laws are the same in all parts. How does he arrange to eat? If he is married, his wife or his children or even his parents can take care of him. See there. I looked there where he was. One of the servants carried him a surplate, and he sat down half of his heels and committed to fill his mouth. Thus, though they gave him food there outside, he was not given the same as we ate here inside. No, he is not. Imagine yourself eating outside, there for not being worthy to enter that establishment. Yes, it would be a humiliation. Then, do you think it is better to castigate us than to incarcerate one in a prison when the others have to work for him to eat? It is true, but I believe that on earth they would never give credence to a law like that, because there are immense corners where none of the actual laws there can be imposed due to the lack of means and access by roads. Thus, an individual with a penalty like that in one of those places would not feel a hundredth part of such a castigation that he would feel here. Yes, it is true that you cannot impose such a law as this on earth. But in time, when by fortune the earth is totally inhabited, such as here on the cart, then this will perhaps be more acceptable. Then we continued discussing this situation for some minutes more, but as it was not my intention to attempt to give explanations about the laws of justice, I leave the account of our talk to follow at another time. Continue main book. The meal was served. Akork served himself with certain abundance of all those dishes which were offered. As I, as usual, limited myself to those plates that I was already acquainted with and knew it was possible for me to eat. I say possible because there were several kinds which I could never bring myself to eat in public, because I was almost certain that I would not ingest them. An opportunity to test this alone came only one time there, and then I did not know where I was and had not taken this particular into consideration. After the meal, we went to where we had left our personal things. Then a cork took out from inside a bag a coat and gave it to me. The purpose, I would like to say, was become the hour had come. Since, despite the dress of the Akkadians, which I was wearing, being very thick, I almost broke my chin with cold, teeth chattering. However, when we arranged to leave, I mentally prepared myself for the long walk back to where we had left our ship, and did not know that Akkork had sent somebody to bring it closer. When I took the first steps, I was half disconcerted, since I expected to go up in an elevator. Then instead of this, we began to descend a stair. That was end of part 22. 23 is headline A Train of Wheels, and that will be on a separate audio file.